And good afternoon, Juno. Ben Brown here. It's time for a Juno afternoon. Very quickly, today's weather forecast is for rain with a high temperature from about 58 to 62 degrees and some variable winds to 10 miles an hour. This afternoon, we're going to have Kevin Araki from the Vocational Training and Resource Center on, and also have some information about this weekend's coming up new old time to Chautauqua. John Hunt will be here to talk about 4th of July activities up in Haines, and Gary Stambaugh and Sigrid Dahlberg will be here to talk about the 4th of July fireworks, along with Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, all your other favorites here on a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Cherokee Nation voters in Oklahoma have given their top leaders a vote of confidence. As Kirk Gortney reports, the tribe's current principal chief and deputy principal chief both won re-election over the weekend.
According to unofficial results released early Sunday morning, Bill John Baker defeated three other candidates in Saturday's election for principal chief, carrying nearly 53% of the votes. Joe Crittenden defeated his lone opponent, winning more than 62% of the votes cast for deputy chief. Voter Dustin Pumphrey says he hopes the tribe's leadership will help make the Cherokee Nation known for something more than gambling.
I don't like the fact that when you say Cherokee, that people immediately think about casinos. I don't think it does good things for our youth's self-esteem and identity to be immediately grouped in with just a casino.
There were also eight tribal council seats on the ballot. At least two council seats will be decided in a runoff set for July 25th. Election Commission officials reported 18,600 Cherokee citizens voted in the election either by absentee, early voting, or at the polls on Election Day. The tribe's jurisdiction stretches across 14 eastern Oklahoma counties with 317,000 citizens. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Bixby, Oklahoma.
The Chickasaw Nation has a new tool to address health care for tribal citizens. A van to provide services to those in rural areas was unveiled Friday in Oklahoma. The tribe teamed up with the Oklahoma Caring Foundation on the van project. Staffed by a public health nurse, the vehicle will give preventative health care to tribal citizens, including immunizations. Tribal leaders from across the country are gathered in St. Paul, Minnesota this week to discuss top issues facing their communities. The National Congress of American Indians Mid-Year Conference kicked off Sunday, with attendees focusing on housing, advocacy, violence against women, and other issues. Tribal, state, and federal officials are among speakers discussing priorities. Sports equipment used at schools in Alaska may soon bear the name Tribal Sports. That's a new brand created by the Sitka tribe and Baden Sports, a Seattle-based sports equipment manufacturing company. The joint venture was announced this month. KCAW's Vanessa Walker has more.
Although the plan is to market this brand nationwide, there's a broader mission besides using the gear just in school sports. Sitka youth will be part of running Tribal Sports. Students will sit on an advisory board especially for them and have a choice in business and community decisions. Sitka Tribe of Alaska General Manager Lawrence Spotted Bird says Tribal Sports will help make kids better citizens and future leaders.
And eventually, as they grow older, become leaders of the tribe, become leaders in this community, become assembly people, become elected officials.
He says portions of Tribal Sports' proceeds will go towards helping local youth fund out-of-town travel for sports and extracurricular activities. This can be particularly expensive for student athletes in Southeast Alaska because air travel is almost always involved. Baden Sports says they will donate a portion of their joint venture earnings back to Tribal Sports. They expect to have the first shipment of athletic balls in Sitka by the end of the summer. The new logo features a hand with a pointed index finger in a traditional Northwest Coast formline design. It was created by the Tlingit and Aleut artist Nicholas Galanin. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Vanessa Walker.
Four Crow Nation Code Talkers were posthumously honored for their service in World War II with a ceremony held Friday on the Crow Agency in Montana. Congressional gold medals were presented to the families of Henry Old Coyote, Barney Old Coyote, Cyril Not Afraid, and Samson Bird and Ground. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And good afternoon. Ben Brown here. You're listening to KRNN, Arts and Culture for Alaska's Capital City. This is a Juneau afternoon, and I'm very excited to introduce our first guest this afternoon, Kevin Araki from the Vocational Training and Resource Center. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Ben.
So tell us about the Vocational Training and Resource Center, what it is, whom it serves, and how it does what it does.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm glad you sort of brought up the who it serves aspect of it. The Vocational Training and Resource Center is under the umbrella of Central Council of Thlinkit-Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. But even though that may sound like it's for natives, it is mainly for the entire public. Anybody could enroll in a class, and anybody can come to either some of my classes, which I teach a lot of computer classes, and there's CDL classes, as well as a fairly new feature of the Vocational Training and Resource Center. We're the clearinghouse for online classes, and we have distance education now through Penn Foster. And that's the primary aspects of the current layout of the Vocational Training and Resource Center. However, we still do rent rooms at VTRC, and there are organizations from all over Juneau and even coming from across the nation that stay at the VTRC building just for either training or even we've had a wide variety of different types of things at VTRC.
Now, the physical facility to which you're referring, you may want to describe exactly where that is for listeners. I think I know it's out near Thlinkit-Haida Hall, correct?
The community council building, which is out on Hospital Drive.
Okay, and so is that the locus for some of these in-person classes, or are there other venues where some of this teaching is done?
Primarily, that's the main site. However, our CDL classes, sometimes they just get together at where the big rig is parked, which is usually out at the Edward K. Thomas building out the road. Mm-hmm. It's what's known as the old Gold Belt building.
Mm-hmm.
It's still part of Thlinkit-Haida Central Council, and it's out in the valley.
Now, you mentioned that you teach some classes in computer computer education is one of your specialties. Well, who are the other faculty members, and what's the total size of the faculty?
Well, actually, it's really small right now. John Lewis, who is our usual CDL instructor, is currently in Canada. It's taking care of his parents. So Cassina Shakespeare is our current CDL instructor, and we have contract instructors. For instance, Shonda Belknap just recently taught a QuickBooks class, and we also have other contract instructors come in every once in a while for specialty classes. For instance, at one time, we taught some oil burner and heating classes.
On how to maintain and keep oil burners working, but in a safe manner.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of for vocation. And we had contract instructors come in for those.
Well, it sounds like it's very practical, literally hands-on education that the Training and Resource Center does. How are the offerings selected? Is there a board of directors or a policy committee that does that, or is it left up to the instructors like yourself?
As far as the computer skills are concerned, we try to listen to the community as far as what kinds of computer skills they'd like to utilize and learn about. So we have a lot of Microsoft Office classes. For instance, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel. PowerPoint is coming up like tomorrow and the next day. And we also have Outlook classes. But we also offer, on occasion, some Adobe classes. And if the community, if the community wanted, and we had the expertise to either try to learn about it, we bring in some instructors, or I teach the class myself. As far as the more vocational classes, we've taught CDL for at least 10 years now, and that's been a very popular class, even though the limit for the class is just 3 students at a time, if you're taking it at VTRC. We've also offered the CDL classes, strangely enough, through distance education or online courses. And we try to listen to the community as far as what types of vocations would be applicable or necessary for learning experience for them.
And if a listener is interested in getting a commercial, we've been using the acronym, a CDL is a commercial driver's license,
which
is something you have to drive, one of those big things, so you're not a menace to people on the road. So if someone listening is interested in getting a CDL or learning how to use Excel better, how would he or she go about signing up for a course? What would the cost be, and what would the time frame be?
Well, our the cost of the class is a variety of costs. For instance, a two-day class costs $249. A one-day class costs $139. And then we are currently going to be teaching, as of tomorrow, a three-day class like PowerPoint. Three-day classes cost $380. The CDL classes are substantially more expensive because they have to use the big rigs. The as I mentioned before, it's limited to 3 students at a time, and they have to schedule those trainings and the actual on-site driver's training part of that. And it's substantially more expensive. But if a person wanted to sign up for any of these classes, you could go to our website, which is www.vtrc.org, and then you can click the links to whatever types of interest you have in the various classes.
And that's going to show the cost, when the class is offered, what sort of preparations you might need to be able to participate in the class. For instance, you probably can't get a CDL unless you already have a regular driver's license.
That's true. And actually, there are quite a few restrictions for getting the actual CDL certificate. You can't have any driver's tickets or any kind of tickets in the last, I think it's 5 years. I'm not sure about that, the actual number. No DWIs forever. A variety of things or restrictions for the CDL license.
And one more question I would have, because it is under the aegis of the Central Council of Lincoln Haida Tribes, is there any scholarship assistance available for tribal members?
There are, through the usage of 477, there's some funds for classes for tribal members who can qualify for those types of things.
All right. Well, so folks who are interested, again, it's vtrc.org
is the
website. So it sounds like that door is pretty easily opened if you can get on a computer and look at that, and there's some educational or vocational training opportunity you'd like to research out there.
That's true.
Anything else, Kevin, you'd like to share?
Well, speaking of the VTRC website, hopefully one of these days we'll get it updated. But you do have to drill down a few steps before you actually see the price, before you see the details of a class. But you could go to the VTRC calendar and get a listing of all the classes that we offer within the next, it's about 6 months worth of training. As I mentioned before, we've got QuickBooks trainings. We've got a whole bunch, a variety of Microsoft Office trainings. And then the one thing that seems to be garnering a lot of attention recently are the online classes through Penn Foster.
Great.
And you can see the hyperlinks for those as well on the website.
Excellent. Well, thank you so very much for coming and talking to us this afternoon. It's Kevin Araki from the Vocational Training and Resource Center. And if that sounds interesting to you, go to their website and figure out what you want to learn and when you can do it.
Super. Thank you very much, Ben.
Yep. Thank you again, Kevin. And it's about 18 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Ben Brown, your host this afternoon, this Monday afternoon. And I have some very exciting guests with some very exciting information to share with you next. I have Natalie Rothaus and MJ Grandy here to talk about, you may have heard something about this, the new old time to Chautauqua. I think there's been a pretty good amount of buzz about it, but let's dive in deeper than the buzz and find out what's really going on. What is a Chautauqua? Why is this one a new old time one? And what's it going to mean when they get to Juno?
Okay, well, they are arriving on Wednesday evening and will be here until the morning of the 6th of July. And when I say they, there are somewhere between 50 and 60 individuals, performers, storytellers, musicians, comics, funny people, aerialists, and everybody in between. And these are essentially a traveling troubadour troupe. And it's similar to what they'll be doing as far as their big event that's taking place on the 3rd of July, a big vaudeville-type community-oriented show. Chautauquas are about education and entertainment, and they started to become very popular in the United States in the mid to, about the mid-1800s, 1850s, 1860s. Started back east, and at the height of the Chautauquas, they were one of the largest forms of entertainment in the United States, and there were probably close to about 10,000 of them. and people like Williams, Jennings, Bryans, Mark Twain, Susan B. Anthony, they came out of that movement. Lots of course, artists, lots of entrepreneurs. Paul Magid, who's one of the Flying Karamazov brothers, mm-hmm. who has been to Juneau multiple times now, he said that kind of what we now know as TED Talks, that also came out in a sense of that movement. And in 1992, when I was with the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, I brought the New All Time Chautauqua, and those were in their early days. They now have been touring all over the Northwest, British Columbia, and Alaska every summer for 32 seasons.
Wow. And so is this the same group that you were able to bring up all the way back in 1992, or are there some of the same people involved?
Some of the same, including we're getting all the Karamazov brothers, and many of them are still the same guys, and some of the other performers, and there are lots of new people, and many different ages. And they are doing a Southeast tour. They started in Ketchikan, and they're in Petersburg today.
Yes, I've actually seen there's a rectangular poster that has a list of all the communities on it, and it's kind of in that old-fashioned font. But if you stop and look at it, it's a pretty impressive list of communities that they're visiting around Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, it's pretty terrific.
Well, one thing that I've wondered is, it almost sounds too good to be true. I mean, we are very accustomed, thanks to your work at JAHC, Natalie, and your successors' work still to this day, at having performing groups come to town. But this is so much more than a unidirectional performing group on a stage that you go and sit in the audience. So it's the educational component. How can they do all this? It seems too good to be true. Tell me how they can do it all.
I believe that they are volunteers, and they are people that do this for the love of traveling and sharing. So they're coming up really low cost. A lot of people are making contributions individually. I'm here representing the Juneau Public Libraries, and the Friends of the Libraries have donated an excellent portion to provide entertainment at the libraries on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to focus on that part. They're everywhere all day long on Thursday, this week, the 2nd of July. They're starting at 10:30 out at the Valley Library with a juggling and magic class.
In the library?
In the library.
Oh,
haven't you
goodness.
Heard we do amazing things? We had a rock band there a couple months ago.
I actually have rehearsed for a play in one of the library community rooms, and but I felt like I was distracting everyone when I did. So the jugglers are going to be juggling in the library.
They're
going to
be juggling in the library and teaching people to juggle, which is even louder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 10:30 to 11:30 at the Valley Library. At the Douglas Library at 11 a.m., and this is possible because there's a ton of people. So we're having four people going to the Valley Library. We're having two or three go to Douglas. They'll be our guest storytellers at our regular Douglas story time. I understand they're bringing bubbles, so that will be part of the fun there. A large group of them will be rendezvousing at the downtown Marine Park at noon. And so it's going to be kind of troubadour. Things will be happening all along, both under the whatever we call that shelter now,
mm-hmm.
as well as I've been working with the people in the kiosks. And so we're going to have little pop-up performances in there. The kiosk people are willing to share, 10, 15 minutes. So if you look at those things, don't they look like mini stages?
Absolutely.
Carol Race and I have dreamed
Punch
for
and
years.
Judy.
And
yes,
exactly. So we're not sure what this little pop-up is, but something will be happening. And then back to the Douglas Library, in honor of Chautauqua, it will be the Chautauqua Talk Challenge,
mm-hmm.
and we're hoping that everybody comes out. We invite the chalk and write the chalk, and people will put the art. I wanted to invite as part of this event.
Great. And if Mary Poppins, if you're listening, you're invited as well.
We need you, Bert.
That's right. I'm not going to do a Dick Van Dyke action, but you're all going to thank me for that later.
And then we'll be sharing a light supper with whoever shows up. And then following the supper, there will be a music jam. And that will go until 8 o'clock when the library closes. So,
and that's on the day before the day before.
That's on the day before the day before. This is like too much fun. It's Juneau party, party, party.
And that, of course, is not a holiday for most folks, the 2nd. But
the
Friday
is
a holiday.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
and the fun continues. They're going to need some time to get together for this big performance on Friday night. So they can't be teaching right up until curtain, right?
No, the workshops are going to be offered at Centennial Hall at no cost to the public. Most everything that they do and like to do is to volunteer, have it accessible for all ages, all sorts of folks. And so from 1 to 4, there's going to be a variety of workshops that will be taking place in some of the meeting rooms at Centennial. And the show, which we're doing as a benefit for KTOO, will start at 7 o'clock. So prior to the fireworks, you can come on downtown, get parking, have a fun family event.
Or just walk downtown from wherever you are.
Walk downtown, right. Or you'll be able to drive back home after the show. It'll be a two-hour performance that, again, will start at around 7 o'clock. And also I wanted to mention that the supper that MJ referred to is, again, community-wide. It's a potluck. And as far as the music, musicians, vocalists, whomever, please, you know, come on down as well, because they themselves, many of their performers are part of what they call the Fighting Instruments of Karma Marching Band, and there's 30 of them. So they invite many other musicians to come in. And they're also going to be part of this year's Juno Volunteer Marching Band at both parades.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a big wow.
So wait.
And wait, there's more.
And at 5 o'clock, as part of the Douglas 4th of July event, they're on the Pioneer Pavilion. They're on the pavilion at 5 o'clock.
Excellent. And actually, tomorrow afternoon, I think Katie Bosler is going to have David Bruce here to talk about festivities in Douglas. So if you're not taking notes now, you have a chance to learn more about this tomorrow when Katie's here in the host chair. So speaking of these workshops Friday, this list is just truly impressive. From A to Z, we've got acrobatics, contact juggling, cartography, through deep clowning to mask making to the soft shoe dance. I mean, it's
the sheet folding.
Folding is the big one. To music.
A workshop. if I may read quickly, it's a workshop to musical accompaniment about learning the secrets of folding a T-shirt in 2 seconds, fitted sheets, pillowcases, pants, shorts, long sleeve shirts, napkins, and dare whoever wrote this say it, non-conforming undergarments. So, I mean, there's a unique skill that probably won't even go on your resume once you have it, but you'll have the peace of mind of knowing you know how to fold to music better than most. So,
yeah. Education not available everywhere.
That's right. And you're allowed to try it at home. Once you learn it, they encourage you to go home and fold your own non-conforming undergarments, which, of course, are going to be clean before you fold them. So this really sounds like it's going to be just a huge jolt for something that's already one of the most exciting times of the year in our capital city. Can Juno handle it, ladies, or is it going to be too much fun?
Dan, you grew up in Juno. You know the answer to that. We're always up for a good time.
Well, yes. And I actually only grew up in Juno from about the ripe age of 23 on. I was in Anchorage and Palmer before then.
So you may have seen them then.
You know, and I don't recall them ever coming through, but I think it's a wonderful thing. And Southeast is very, very lucky to be the recipients of their generosity and their presence this year.
I also would like to mention that one of our own Juno folks, Val Snyder, who owns Brown Boots Costumes in Douglas, is also a juggler, and she is one of the Chautauquans for this tour. And there are three other people from Alaska. We've got some folks from Anchorage and somebody from Homer who are touring. So, I mean, they wherever they go, they love people to join in. And we are currently still looking for food donations, transportation donations. Anybody's got a bike out there that they want to lend, that would be great. We're looking for volunteers, you know, for you all this stuff. As we all know, it just takes a lot of people to make this happen, and it should be very exciting.
So if people are interested in volunteering, whom should they contact?
They could get a hold of me.
Okay, and by email, or if you want to have them call you?
They could call my home number, 586-6925.
All right, Natalie, thank you for that. And so that's if you want to volunteer, you want to donate some food or a mode of transportation. If you just want to come to one of the workshops, you don't have to pre-register. You can just show up. And they've got a plan so that if 75 people want to learn how to fold the music and only two people want to do contact juggling, they will reallocate Chautauquans and make
it
work.
They will figure it out.
Good. And then if you do want
to
buy a ticket. Yes, that's right. They can literally stretch themselves into pretzel shapes. But for folks who do want to purchase a ticket to come see the vaudeville show on Friday night, how would they go about doing that?
Through Vendini. Mm-hmm. They could come into K2. They could go online. They could buy them at the door.
And there's no surcharge for buying them at the door.
And we can't forget Farside Books.
Of course not. Our favorite bookstore ticket distributor. And they're $15 a piece?
$15 for general, military, seniors, and children. Five and up are $5. Mm-hmm. And then under five is free.
Under five is free. And this is a Chautauqua, so there is no VIP seating section.
This is true. And if people
very
want, they could go to KTOO and go to the homepage. There's a button there for the new All Time Chautauqua events. You go to the public library and check out the calendar. And you could also go to the newoldtimechautauqua.org.
And that'll
and
tell you about their Alaskan tour and then also
and
some more about what they're doing.
A lot about them
yep.
and their history and where they are currently.
And, of course, just to mention the fact that, once again, they are very generously donating the proceeds of the evening performance on mm-hmm. Friday night before the fireworks to KTOO, which coincidentally will help make sure that KTOO's fundraising goals for this fiscal year are met before the end of the – well, right soon
no,
into
right.
the new fiscal
soon
year.
Soon into it. It's a great way to kick off.
That's right. The next fiscal year.
For the ultimate community event.
That's right. So, well, this is very exciting. I'm excited about it. It's kind of hard to figure out, well, if I could only do one of these workshops, which one? But I think we should all be looking at the list and figuring out how we can enjoy this, because we're not going to have them come every year. This is the year. 2015 is
right.
the year.
Since 1992. And we also can't, myself, George Reifenstein, and Amy Keston, or sort of the three main volunteer folks who have been working on putting this together, and we just really can't thank Juno in its generosity. How many businesses, individual sponsorships, for just kind of coming out of the blue, and we really, it's really a community effort to make this a success for everyone.
Well, so all of those of you listening who are a part of that generous community, which is pretty much all of you, thanks to you. And I'm sure there's some specific donors whose help and assistance made this possible, so we are grateful to them. And so thank you so much, MJ and Natalie, for coming in, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on what promises to be a very fun Independence Day weekend here in Juneau.
Okay, wear your clown wig.
I'll do my best.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 29th of June, 2015. It's the birthday of the French aviator and writer Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, born in Lyon in 1900. Joined the French army, where he flew his first plane. He began flying airmail routes into the Sahara Desert. He loved the Sahara. He wrote his first novel in the Sahara, Southern Mail, came out in 1929. Moved to South America to fly the mail over the Andes, and then went back to Africa to carry the mail between Casablanca and Port Etienne. Worked as a test pilot through the 30s, survived several plane crashes, joined the French Army on the outbreak of World War II. He was turned down as a pilot, which is when he began to write his best-known book, The Little Prince, published in 1943. The following year, he flew a mission for the French in North Africa, disappeared July 31st, 1944, and was never seen again. It was on this day, 1956, President Eisenhower signed the Federal Highway Act, which established the interstate highway system. There had been plans for it ever since World War I, when the Army decided that the condition of national roads needed to be improved for the purpose of national defense. In 1938, President Roosevelt drew up a map of superhighways. There was a model of one demonstrated at the New York World's Fair of 1939. As a general in World War II, President Eisenhower had been impressed by Germany's Autobahn system, and so he pushed through the interstate highway system. It was the largest public works project in American history. It took longer than they expected. It took 35 years instead of 12, and it cost about three times as much as they had initially budgeted. But it was done. Interstate 80, built across the country from New York City to San Francisco. It was a great boon for the hotel chains and fast food outlets. And it was a great boon for the suburbs as well. It was not necessarily good for American literature. John Steinbeck, in his book Travels with Charlie, complained about the interstate, how you are bound to the wheel and your eyes to the car ahead and to the rearview mirror, and you don't see the countryside around you. Jack Kerouac wrote On the Road in 1951, and by the time it was published, 1957, construction had begun on the interstates. Kerouac said years later, "You can't do what I did anymore." And in his book Blue Highways, William Least Heat Moon wrote, "Life doesn't happen along interstates. It's against the law." Here's a poem by Jane Hirschfield entitled In a Room with Many Windows. In a room with many windows, some thoughts slide past, uncatchable, ghostly. Three silent bicyclists. Slowly, a woman on crutches. It is like the night you slept out on the sandy edge of a creek bank, feeling the step of some light, clawed thing on your palm, crossing to drink. You are nothing to it, hummock, earth clump, root knob, wild in the dark. Like that thirsty creature, to you, you could guess it, but you can't name it. In a Room with Many Windows, a poem by Jane Hirschfield from her collection The Beauty, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You teach him to respect the land. You teach him to respect the game. You teach him to respect the sea. And to respect his culture. But are you teaching him to respect women?
Together we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/CDVSA.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's 37 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown, your host, this Monday, the 29th of June. And now in the program, we're going to hear some more about 4th of July activities. These will be those activities going on in Haines. And we are talking now to John Hunt. John, how are you this afternoon?
Great. Thanks for the call, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I wish I could be, how are things in Haines this afternoon? Is it lovely up there?
Yeah, it's a bit breezy and kind of overcast. The rains of the morning are done.
Good. The same here, and frankly, we needed the rain. So, well, let's get on to talking about what you folks have planned for the 4th of July weekend.
All right. Well, we've got the 5th Annual Music Festival in Haines going on. It starts at 6 o'clock on Saturday evening on the 4th of July, and we've got three bands playing. For the past 4 years, we have featured local bands, and this year, for the first time, we also have one of the bands that is performing at the Atlin Music Festival later this month, later in July, I should say, and that's the California Feet Warmers. They've got their own website if people want to hear them, but they are an 8-piece New Orleans-style jazz band with horns and singers and drummers, and it's a lot of fun. We're really glad that they're stopping off in Haines the week before the Atlin Music Fest.
That is very exciting. And where in Haines will the music festival be taking place?
It is right in the middle of the parade grounds, which is the old marching area for the Fort Seward soldiers. So it's right in the middle of the old fort with the old buildings that everybody takes photos of. It's in the Fort Seward parade grounds, right in the middle, and a nice stage, nice dancing area, and all ages are welcome.
All right, and so if folks want to plan to come up to Haines and participate in the music festival on the 4th, do they need to get tickets in advance, or could they do that at the venue or when they got to town?
No, they can get them when they get here, and the nice thing about this year is there's great ferry service Friday and Saturday. There are ferries. Even you could even leave on Saturday and be in Haines by 5. The ferries are running on time, and still make it to the music festival, which starts at 6, and then returning to Juneau from Haines, there's ferries Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It works out great this year for ferry travel from Juneau or Skagway or wherever people are coming from.
Well, that is great. And, of course, sometimes ferries are not timed exactly when people need them, so it's good to know the stars are aligned and that it's going to be easy to get to Haines and get back home this year for people.
Yeah, and even though it's not quite dark, we do have fireworks. The parade grounds is also the place where there's a big, a loud cannon which goes off a couple times during the 4th of July, and that's always a crowd pleaser. And there's great food. There's all kinds of drinks for soft drinks and local beers and things like that, and we've got food right there at the venue. And two other bands who people will probably recognize performing at the music festival. First are the Fish Pickers, and they've been playing around here for a dozen years or so, and they play at the bike race and the Fisherman's Feed and the fair and the 4th of July. And then that's the Fish Pickers. And then also another band is the God Particles, who've just been around for about 3 years, but they play pop music, and it's a really fun band. They're both Haines favorites.
Excellent.
As far as bands.
Well, I figured God's Particle were new because they were only just discovered 3 years ago by scientists, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Higgs and Boseman, you betcha. So, yeah, it's nice that they centered on Haines where it got nice heavy gravity.
Absolutely. Now, if folks listening wanted to come up to Haines, are going to make some exciting last-minute plans to come to the music festival and hear these three great bands, and rooms might be kind of hard to come by in the hotels there in town, are there places that people could camp in town with some ease?
Yes. First of all, thanks for mentioning hotel places. We do have a brand new hotel that just opened at the start of this month. And then there's also, there are campgrounds. There are lots of places. There's a hostel. There's lots of different choices for people. There's a RV park that is about two blocks away. There's also campgrounds that are three, four blocks away and further out if people would like to get out into the woods and do some camping or something like that.
So not having a prearranged place to stay should not be an impediment to anyone who's excited about coming up to Haines for Independence Day weekend, it sounds like.
Righty-o. Should I put you down for a couple of tickets, Dan?
You know, as you may have heard and as we're known, we have a pretty full roster of events here in the capital city this weekend. I'd like to be in both places at once, and so let me check in with my cloning, some people know about cloning. Maybe I can manage to be in both places simultaneously.
Righty-o. Hey, I wanted to say thanks to Jeff Brown for setting this up. I've known Jeff a long time, and I sent him the information about this music festival, and he contacted me that same day last week and said, let's get you on the air. So thanks a lot, and I hope to see a lot of folks. Usually we have quite a few people come up from Juneau, down from Skagway, different parts of of the region. So thanks a lot to Jeff, and thanks to you, Ben, for putting me on the show.
No, my pleasure, John. And, you know, just for listeners to keep in mind, Haines isn't just about a brewing festival and the Southeast State Fair. There's also this wonderful midsummer event, and that's what we're talking about, 4th of July, three great bands at the music festival. If people wanted to learn more, is there a place they could go online to edify themselves a little bit more about some of the activities going on?
Yeah, they could go to the Haines Tourism or the Haines Chamber of Commerce websites. Also, they could go to the Haines, the Southeast Alaska State Fair, and there's links around there. Or, as I said, if you want to hear more about the California Feet Warmers, they've got videos, they've got audio, and you can check them out on YouTube and other sites for the California Feet Warmers for that band itself.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for calling us and sharing this information. Best wishes for a safe and very fun Independence Day weekend in Haines for you and everyone else up there. And thanks again for talking to us, John, this afternoon.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Bye.
This is Bird Note. At dusk, in the far western reaches of Alaska's Aleutian chain of islands, thousands of tiny whiskered auklets fly in to nest in cavities deep in rock crevices. Whiskered auklets are miniature relatives of puffins and murres. Charcoal gray, they're about 8 inches long, and owe their name to the long, slender white plumes that sprout from their heads each summer. Two rows down the side of the face, and a third set that stands like antennae above their eyes. These fancy white plumes very likely play a visual role in courtship and mate selection. But they're not just for show. The auklet's whiskers have an important sensory function, too. When the birds enter their cliffside nest cavities, they find themselves in utter darkness. The whiskers enable the auklets to feel their way along in the dark. Much like the whiskers of a cat, they're acutely sensitive. By summer's end, when nesting is done, whiskered auklets return to life on the open sea, like many seabirds. And with no dark crevices to navigate, and no mates to impress, they molt their multi-purpose whiskers. Until next spring. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
There's something for everyone at the Southeast Alaska State Fair, July 30th through August 2nd in Haines, Alaska. Enjoy the live music on three stages, fair food, rides, and carnival games, or watch the logging show, adventure race, wearable art show, and more. 4 days of all-ages fun at the Southeast Alaska State Fair. Information and tickets at seakfair.org.
And it's about 46 minutes after the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon, and we have a guest here who's going to tell us about something very exciting that's going to be blowing up very soon above Juno in the skies. Gary Stambaugh is here to talk about the fireworks on the 4th of July. How are you this afternoon, Gary?
Oh, it's a great day.
Yes, it is. So the fireworks on the 4th of July, a staple of summer merrymaking in the capital city. What can people look forward to this year? What should they watch out for? And how can they make it the best possible fireworks experience?
Well, it's always a wonderful experience no matter what. It's always the best show you'll ever see.
Uh-huh.
And we've got a really great show planned out. And every year we get to decide how can we make the show different. And so people get to look for different things in the show, and you want to watch for stuff. And that's what makes the show really fun. So it's just not the same old boring bunch of stuff up into the air.
Good. And so in that vein, is there something, you don't want to ruin any surprises, because fireworks are by their nature kind of an exciting thing in the moment. You've got to watch them. You can't watch a video of it. You want to be there in person next to people going ooh and ah and hearing the explosions. But do you want to drop a hint about something that might be new and exciting and different in this year's show?
Well, we always have things, to finish out a show. I'm sure many, many people have seen a shot we call the willow. You know, it goes off the end and it goes all the way down the water and you get to ooh and ah. And we're ooh and ahing also. And by the way, we hear all the public standing on the docks and everywhere. We hear that out on the barge. It's amazing how the sound travels. And we're like, oh, they really like that. Well, we do too. It goes all the way down the ground. And it's just so much fun for the finale of what the big thing on the finale is going to be. And this year for our finale, we've got quite a cool little finale. And it's actually a multicolor go-getter wave.
A go-getter wave.
And we have to always enjoy the names because, like, so what the heck is this? Oh, yeah, we had a go-getter and a green, so that must look like this. And so it gets put together, and we can take and stack shells up. So you might see one down a little lower and then one up a little higher, then one up higher there. So you might be watching the lower ones, and it'll build and get higher and higher. And if it's the same kind of shell, and we can incorporate a couple of different designs in, and then over the top of it, the great big one goes off, and then you really get to do ooh and ah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure there will be no shortage of oohing and ahing this year, and I will be out there on the shore oohing and ahing. But for those of you out on the water, this is a barge out in Gastineau Channel that these are detonated from.
Right, and it's important to note that we are on the DIPAC barge, and we have to just thank DIPAC enormously, the community does. And whenever you're out there, just thank them for the use of their concrete barge. Nothing could be better for us to be out there and have a show to shoot off right from there. We're tied up to a tug, probably Kodiak King, with AMAC towing. And we sit out there. We've got a safety perimeter around there. The Coast Guard keeps. You've got to stay away 300 yards away from us where we're at. And it's for your own safety for fallout and stuff. We like to position ourselves out in the channel. Basically, I line up right off of the library.
Mm-hmm.
So if you happen to be downtown and along the stretch and through there, Marine Park and up along the way there, that's a great spot to be lined just right up to kind of catch it. But it's so well seen from all sides of the whole darn valley through here, because from Douglas and across the way, and we have a lot of shots that are turned just so everybody can see them from different angles.
Right. Equal access. Trying to keep
Absolutely.
All parts of the capital city happy, an impossible task, but one that we all have to keep trying to do. How many folks are out on the barge with you doing the show?
Well, we've got a really great group of volunteers, and for example, tomorrow we'll probably have 25 people going out to just set up tubes and get the thing going. And then on the 3rd of the morning, that's when we'll actually be out there with the powder, and the crew is all there, and everybody gets in their slots, and we have to manually put in each of these bombs into a tube and then run wires back to a control station, and that's where we shoot off from. It's all extremely safe, but we're out there on a little postage stamp in the middle of the water, and it makes it more fun that way.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably a little safer than being rafted up with a bunch of other boats with a bunch of people that have had a whole bunch of beer. That just probably wouldn't end very well. So.
No, yeah, it just doesn't. So we spend the whole day, and we're right out there till, you know, when we go out to do the shoot right at midnight and, you know, bring in the 4th of July. And so far, we always hope our weather is looking good and kind of looks at it will break for us nice.
I was actually just looking at the forecast from the National Weather Service, and for Friday night is just updated. We're looking at mostly cloudy, a low around 53, a high around 67. Now, some clouds are good. If you have a completely clear sky, you don't have the backdrop. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And we have our shells go up to maybe, you know, 1,200, 1,300 feet on the big ones. So that's like lower than the height of the tram.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were on the tram, you'd be seeing looking over the top of them. And they're really fun to see from down below or going straight out to it. Or the folks over on Douglas watching, like even from the highway, they've got a very cool angle shot into it to watch. But with the clouds down, it's much, much better. And certainly when we have certain shots out there, they're called salutes, which are the big booms, though no big fire that you see anyplace. And those are the ones we really want to shake around and have them bounce around the mountains and zip around. And you can be out wherever you are, and you'll hear it echo all the way around you. And that's the joy of being in Juneau. And that's why we have very special shots just for that. And we're really the only place in Alaska that can get away with doing that because we've got the amphitheater here.
Right. That wouldn't work so well in the Anchorage Bowl.
They don't get to do it.
Nope. So speaking of noises, I know many pet owners have to take certain precautions because their dogs can be a little spooked by the fireworks. Are you a pet owner? Is there anything you have to do for a creature you're leaving back at home, or do you hear a lot about that?
I'm pretty safe. We get to hear lots about it. I have lots of friends with just loving dogs usually that just like to have a little comfort and, quieted down, and some people just plain never get to see the fireworks because they're sitting with their animals, and they may not really care for that too much. And believe me, we try to have the show go as quickly as possible, you know, no more than 25 minutes, really more down to 20 minutes, just so there's the least amount of impact on the animals out there. And if people know whether the animal is affected, and even cats, they'll go scurrying away when they hear sharp sounds and stuff around.
Right. And, of course, a lot of people like to do fireworks on their own. I was a little concerned going into the summer that we were going to be bone dry by the 4th. It looks like things are not that. I'm certain the fire chief still wants people to, A, obey the law, and be safe and practical with whatever they're doing legally. But that's something you guys are professionals, and so.
Absolutely. We're licensed out. We have, you know, it's commercial-grade stuff. It's the big stuff. Talking with our supplier up in Anchorage, and they're not shooting any shows up there at all. He's going down to Valdez for the only show that they're going to have up in that area at all, and everything else is shut down, obviously. And, you know, we got a pretty nice drench this morning, which is just fine with us, just as long as we don't have the drench on the 3rd so everybody can get out, not have to wear, you know, the raincoats and the glasses.
Well, I'm confident that this favorable forecast is going to hold. And so if you, Gary, and I both think we're going to have good weather, we're going to have good weather.
We're going to have
it. It's as simple as that. So, well, that's really wonderful. And how many years, this probably goes back 100 years, but do you know, how long have you been involved with the fireworks in Juneau?
You know, I was having that question this morning with Ron Flint, who's been doing a couple years. He actually is on his 40th year now, started when he was just getting out of high school with Larry Parker, which goes way back then. And Larry started back in the 40s, and they used to have it right out here on the spit at the end of Gold Creek for the people who watched in the early 60s. And then there was a house out there. So they've been shooting there, and then it has moved around a little bit. There's off the rock dump, and it's shifted around now to a bunch of spots. Now we're in a good, safe little area. I've only been doing it for, 18 years?
I'm mere tenderfoot.
I'm just trying to learn, and, you know, Ron's kind of settling back into the guy that's finally now gets to relax a little bit more, and he hands off to the youngsters, and so I guess I'm one of the youngsters.
Well, you're certainly on the spectrum. Everything is relative, but are there some really relatively much younger people that are kind of the next generation that you and he are training so that this will continue to be a strong community tradition?
Absolutely. We've got some incredible volunteers that have stepped up the plate, think like, hey, this is kind of a cool thing to do, and it's a great thing for the community, and they put the time in. And you bet, there's a whole other group being groomed along the way, and there's a lot of little aspects to this and the safety involved with it. And we get in to have, you know, close to 300 man hours to do this show out there for 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
300 hours, and it's just a lot of work, and people don't really have to be dedicated into it to do it.
And they can't spend the whole night at partying and then go out and be setting off fireworks again.
Not at all. You've got to be ready to go. The clock ticks, and there's thousands of people waiting and see if you've got it together or not.
Right, and there's no room for error, no room for mistake or mishap. So we are very grateful for your devotion and those that are working with you to make this happen, because it really is one of the most fun parts of what is an incredibly fun weekend. You were listening before to me talk to Natalie Rothaus and MJ Grandy about this new old-time Chautauqua. That's something we don't get every year, but thank heavens we do get the fireworks every year. To have them both in 1 year is going to make 2015 extra special, I think.
And it's just a tradition, and people support it well, and I always tell people, be sure to go out and watch them, because it's a different show every year, and it's a heck of a lot of fun, really.
Well, so there you have it. The fireworks are going to be on. The weather's going to be good. So just figure out where you're going to go, what friends you're going to be with, make plans, and we will kick off Independence Day weekend in great style. Of course, the beauty of this year is Friday's a holiday all day, and then we get to have the fireworks, and then we get to have Independence Day on Saturday.
And the fireworks crew will hear you out there.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, thank you very much, Gary Stombaugh, for coming and sharing this information with us, and best wishes for a successful and happy fireworks celebration on Friday
night.
Thanks, Ben. All right, very good.
Looking for something to do this year before the fireworks? Try the pre-fireworks barn dance Friday night, July 3rd, 7:30 to 11 at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. We'll have live Celtic and old-time music by the Full Circle Band, led by Greg Berger and Mary DeSmet. Tom Paul will call and teach contra and square dances, so you don't need experience or a partner. It's a low-cost, high-fun start to the holiday weekend. Discounts for students and seniors free for JV's AmeriCorps and Kids Under 12, the annual pre-fireworks barn dance.
And it is about 3 minutes before the hour. Ben Brown here on a Juno afternoon. We're going to hear a track from Anna and Elizabeth, some artists who will be visiting Juno next week. They're slated to play at 7 p.m. with the Goldtown Nickelodeon, again, Wednesday the 8th of July. This is Anna and Elizabeth. Just about 2 minutes before the hour, Ben Brown here. Thank you so much for listening to a Juno afternoon this Monday, the 29th of June. The weather forecast for this evening is numerous rain showers diminishing in the evening and then becoming isolated late, patchy fog. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, a high around 63, and kind of mostly rainy, cloudy, but no commitment to a lot of moisture heading into the weekend. And then it's looking like it's going to be mostly cloudy and then indeed partly cloudy. So I think we're going to have some sunshine. Join us Juno afternoon again tomorrow for Katie Bosler. And thanks for listening today.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown.